Thank you for downloading from the BBC. For details of our complete range of podcasts and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
This is BBC World Service. I'm Bobby Friction, and in West London, in the UK, where I grew up, I was surrounded by British Asians who couldn't speak English. Some of them still can't. This got me thinking about what it's like to live in the UK and struggle with the language. The recent 2011 census in England and Wales showed that there are now nearly 1 in 8 people living here who weren't born here. Around two-thirds of these people arrive speaking very little English. And with requirements to pass an English test to apply for a visa or citizenship, it's never been more important for immigrants to master basic language skills. This is not a programme about immigration. In this programme, we'll explore how the increasingly multicultural population are learning English. What challenges do they face? How easy is it to find an English course? And what is it like for those who never master the language?
I came over to UK in 1999. I got married to a British citizen, that's why I came over. But unfortunately, that didn't work. And one of the things was my language.
Puneet is now working as a highly qualified dental nurse in Birmingham who speaks fluent English. But this wasn't always the case.
In those days when I came, I think it was Prince Edward and Sophie, they got married. And he was talking to me about their marriage or something, and I didn't understand. I used to be scared that I hope they don't ask me any question. You know, my husband and my sister-in-law used to laugh behind my back. One thing which I didn't know what they used to call me was a freshie. I'm so sorry I'm saying that, but I didn't know what that meant at that time.
Now, freshie, being British Asian myself, I know this slang word. It means fresh off the boat. Asians who are born here will use it as slang with Asians who are maybe not fresh off the boat but are recent immigrants. Do you think your language skills were part of the issues that were happening in the family?
Definitely. I think I didn't have much of a say in the house when I was there, especially when he insisted that I always have to speak to him in English. And when I did try, and that was with the accent, they used to laugh. And then in the end, I just stopped. I just kept my mouth shut.
In those initial years of your marriage, when you didn't know that much English, what was it like to be you here in the UK?
Very lonely and low, yeah.
During those times, let's just move your husband's family aside. How did the United Kingdom make you feel?
So,
did you feel cut off from everything?
You know, I was only 20 when I came over. I was a young, bubbly person. Then after 8 months or so, I wasn't that person who, you know, came over, and I was just so quiet. I had to have counselling for years. After 8 months, I broke with my husband. But I had a very tough time, I would say. I had to stay in a women's refuge where there was people from different cultures, different races. So we were watching English television programs all the time. And I think that's where we picked up our English. But in the refuge, a lady used to come regularly in antidepressants. Yeah.
Where I now live in Birmingham, there's a diverse ethnic population who rub along most of the time speaking many different languages. Parminder Singh Jutla is part of the Punjabi community in Birmingham who works for Unlimited, a charity that invests in social entrepreneurs. He took me to Soho Road to see multicultural Britain in action.
You can go, now go straight up and we'll go take a lift here.
Okay.
All Asian-owned or immigrant-owned businesses.
And there's a lot of Eastern Europeans around here now,
yeah,
as well.
These guys are Polish, you know, girls are Polish. So that, see that Dana's hair salon? That's Polish stroke Kurds. There's Kurds in there. That's like Asian. But there's Baltic supermarket, European shop.
I think I was one of the few lucky ones. So born in 71, so you're looking at all the great times in the 70s we had. When I was growing up, our schools were mixed, you know, because communities were still mix. So we had white English people, you know, Irish people, Afro-Caribbeans, Asians. So we were speaking a common language, which was English. English was a recognised language in the house due to the fact my mother was taught English in Kenya. So my mother made us learn English every evening, you know, reading books. And then on the flip side, my father came to this country, didn't have a good command of the English language, spoke in Punjabi with us. Even to this day, we will speak in Punjabi. Even our kids, my children, they will try to speak in Punjabi with our dad.
So, Palmer, where are we now?
We're on the outskirts of the city centre of Birmingham at a engineering firm, which is owned by my father and my uncle. It's a successful firm, and neither one of them have, as you would say, the greatest command of the English language, but they've made themselves a success.
From the BBC.
Thank you, Uncle.
My name is Diljit Singh Jotla.
Yeah, my name is Gurdayal Singh Mann. We got electrical motor rewind business.
So, Uncle G, tell us about when you came to this country and your level of English.
Shall I tell in Punjabi? English.
English is better. Yeah.
When I came in this country, you know.
1967.
Yeah, something 68. Can't speak English, right? But that's better now. Not that bad, you know, not good, you know, but it's okay.
How did you set up a business without full command of English?
If English not very good, doesn't matter. Depends on our skill. That's all, you know.
It's not your language skills, mm-hmm. it's actually your work.
Yeah. It's your effort as well, you see.
Do you think if your English was better, your business would be even bigger than it is now?
Definitely.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. You know. Yeah.
So essentially what you're saying is you've attained a certain level, but English is the key to this society.
It is, definitely. If you can build a business in England, definitely you need English, yes.
So what about your wives, your relatives and your children? Is their level of English important to you?
Yes, my wife doesn't speak English, but my children, they're all born here, they speak good English.
And what about your wife? I mean, she can't set up a business.
No, she can't set up business now, only housework.
Do you sometimes feel bad for her, like that she's not got a skill that other people have got?
That's right, I do feel like a bit backward, definitely, you know. But if she had English skill, perhaps she could have helped here with our business. The way she worked in them days, used to be a lot of clothing factories where all the Asian women worked, so she didn't really get a chance to do it. No, I don't think she'll bother now.
When Parminder's family came to the UK, nobody was required to speak English. It's now a different story. The government introduced an English test in 2005 for people applying for visas, settlement and citizenship. This more recently extended to spouses and dependents. Before entry, each person must show that they can understand basic English by providing an English certificate from an approved centre. I asked Gurdayal Singh what he thought of this.
Well, I think it's good. It'll help people to settle here with their English skill.
So your wife wouldn't actually pass that test if she was coming over now?
No, she wouldn't have passed that test, no.
Bye-bye. Is this a new Gurdwara?
Yeah, refurbished. And I think places of worship end up being those places where people feel comfortable and some of these Gurdwaras teach English. And that's the easier way for women to engage and learn English, to be able to converse with people who are non-Asian.
One of the fastest growing immigrant communities in the UK, the Chinese, have a particular struggle with English. The languages are so fundamentally different. 26 English letters versus 5,000 Chinese symbols. We visited the Wei Yin Chinese Women's Society, which offers support to the large Chinese community in Manchester.
My name is Wen Li. I'm from China. I have taken away business with my husband before I can speak English. I found everything very difficult, like deaf, because I can't hear people what they say. I was working 12 hours per day, running the business, and then haven't got the time, and then I need to take care of children and the house. So I can't concentrate to learn English. So difficult.
Sylvia Shum is the director of Wei Yin.
It's about 99%. Their English level very limited. Go to the takeaway restaurant today yourself. Most lady in the counter, Chinese, they smiling, and you say 24, and they know 24 means spare rib. Maybe they can't say spare rib, but they know 24 is a spare rib, and they smiling to you, and you think they understand you. Because that's the way to survive in this country. They don't feel confident. They feel they not belong to anybody. When the human being feel not belong to anybody, they will become depressed or over the top go to casino.
My name is Chung Choi. My age 63. I come from Hong Kong. 即有人
The worst moments are whenever he receives a letter, he doesn't understand what it is about. And the other thing is when he's not well, he goes to see a doctor or a GP, he just can't explain what happens to him and always have to depend on interpreter. It really frustrates him.
Don Flynn is the director of the Migrants' Rights Network.
As far as the health service is concerned, the NHS, you're entitled to an interpreter in your own language. It's regarded as being good practice in local authorities, or at least it has been until comparatively recently. There has been an attitude that's established itself among some local authorities that this discourages people from integrating.
The 2011 census showed that 4% of households in England and Wales have no adult who speaks English as their main language. And satellite TV in the home has meant that it's getting easier not to be exposed to English. Now people just watch TV in their mother tongue. Sylvia Shem from Wei Yin Community Centre.
Watching Chinese channel, all this, you will be living in the box. They don't going out to have the challenge. But to me, it's like the prison. What kind of quality life you want? Why not you turn to community centre like us into enjoyment environment and then build up the English, build up the confidence, how to look at the computer, how to do the internet, social network. Social network is very, very important. You can do something for those people, hardworking people.
With a growing immigrant population and a need to pass the English certificate test, there's also a growing need for English classes. This is creating pressure on local services, which provide some free English courses. Nasri Mahmoud learned English at Spark Hill Centre in Birmingham. She came to the UK in 2006 as a refugee from Somalia via Norway.
If you learn from the streets, you learn wrong.
For immigrants who come to the UK, do you think there are enough chances for them to learn English?
If they are healthy, yes. And here's so many opportunities to learn. I got a child. I started when she was 9 months. I got the help in the government to look after my daughter. And they paid the daycare. Now I'm looking for a job.
Would you like to work full-time?
Of course.
What would your ideal job be?
Teacher.
Government funding for ESOL courses, that's English for speakers of other languages, like other public funding, has been stretched by recent public sector cuts. Samira Aziz is an ESOL tutor at the Spark Hill Centre.
We've got ESOL learners that have just come into the country, but they're not allowed to enrol into classes until they've been here for a year.
Why? Why 1 year? Why was that put
it's
in?
It's government policy. And also because their passports say no recourse to public funds, so we're not allowed to fund those learners. But There are private institutions that will take learners. There are some charitable organisations as well, and some church organisations are offering ESOL classes.
As the public services and the pot of money shrinks over the next 10 years, how do you think that's going to affect everything that you do?
I think it's going to affect social cohesion, because a lot of the mothers that come to us, they'll often say that, oh, well, we're here to help our children with their homework or their schoolwork, and as the funding's cut, those learners will have nowhere to go, they'll just stay at home.
I was 18 when I arrived here. I came from Iraq in 1980, a year after Saddam Hussein came to power. I was active in student politics, and because of that, I had to flee.
Fazil Kawani is the Executive Director of Integration at the Refugee Council.
I left my family and friends behind, so I was on my own in this country. I lived in a hostel with lots of people, and I wanted to learn language so I can talk to people. Isolation is a very, very big problem. Some of our clients have mental health problems, and this is to do with isolation. So that's why I really wanted to learn the language. And most of our clients want to learn language. Many of our clients don't speak English, and their English is not adequate to be able to communicate, to be able to get access to services. In this country, the role of voluntary sector is the third sector. It's very, very important. The role of volunteers in hospitals, the role of interpreters as volunteers, the role of community, refugee community organizations, migrant community organizations is very important.
Eleni Pavledo is a refugee from the Congo. She's lived in Belgium, Cyprus, and now the UK. She spent much of her childhood on the move.
The first war, it was from Congo. We had to move in Belgium. Then after, we have to go back when the war was over, but another war came around, and we had to move in Angola. All this time we've been living in a refugee camp, and you see, in this time we don't have a school, and I was 15 years old, so it's a part of life you're missing to go to school. We have to survive, we have to work. And when I came in UK, I had the opportunity to go back to school. So I'm trying to catch back what I left when I was 15.
Talk to me about what it was like inside your head in those first few months when you couldn't understand English.
I used to push my daughter to be in front of me to speak. It was really difficult. Now I'm more confident, that for sure. And I do help people that are coming first time in the UK as well, and I'm trying to help.
So you're now helping other people learn English. Are there any great examples, great successes?
Yes, because in my job, I'm working as a waitress. It's a multicultural people we're working together, and most of them, when they're coming, they don't understand really English. I push them to go to find a local adult educational, to show them where to go. And they helped them a lot to be in a society. And now even I am a volunteer with adult disabled people, and that helped me. I am an example, and I would like to speak really like a native, to understand the meaning and to laugh when they make a joke.
Definitely, jokes bring people together.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
As we deal with shifting populations and a multitude of languages in the UK, there's a real need to adapt. Companies like NFT, a large supermarket distribution business in St Albans, have seized the opportunity to introduce English classes into the workplace.
So I want you to use the base form of the verb in a sentence, and then I want you to use the same verb in its past simple tense.
They employ a mixed workforce, 40% of whom don't speak English as a first language. Many are Polish, now the second largest group of foreign residents in England and Wales.
Hello, my name is Peter, which in Polish is Piotr. I am 32 years old. I came to Britain in 2006. Just after I finished education, I finished master's degree as a PE teacher. The biggest difference is working just, you know, like a simple factory worker. The problem is it's too many of us. So the easiest way is to just to sit with your mates from your country. So every single education, every single knowledge about the language is very important for us.
Attention, Jerry Rowan, could you please go to the health and safety room?
Talking about the health and safety, yes, it is important because there are rules and regulations and we need to know them before we start working. The older generation, we all learned mostly Russian at school. Now all the children, they start learning English. It is very important, especially if you want to live the same as you are living in your own country. I've got a little child called Maya. She's 5 years old. It helped me, you know, doing homework with her. You know, it's very useful. You know, our children are going to school here, so we don't want to be worse than 3 years old child. We want to help them. My dream is to speak English, you know, fluently, write fluently, and read fluently because I like reading books.
So what benefits do NFT hope to see as more of their staff learn English? Steve Whitty is the general manager for operations.
They're very skilled in their own countries, but the language barrier at times limits maybe their development opportunities as individuals. The stronger that their English skills become, the more confident that they become in their ability to be able to engage and communicate. And now what we've got is we've got the situation where more and more colleagues are actually getting engaged in this process. It's worth noting we're also going to be running Polish courses, which a number of the English-speaking guys will be very interested in engaging with.
The findings of the 2011 census told us what we've already seen before our eyes. Britain's population is changing fast and we need to change with it. Integrating the people who arrive here and making them feel part of our society starts with learning the language. Only by being able to communicate will we understand each other, respect each other, and live happily alongside each other in all our glorious, multilingual, multi-layered humanity.
Now I feel more confidence. I pass my driving test, and then I learn childcare as well. So I feel really proud of myself.
Now I'm very happy. I've got a little daughter.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, she's two. Long journey it was.
But you're free now, aren't you?
Yes, I am. My accent is not that bad. Even my patients where I work now, people actually say that, "Are you from Canada?"
The Path to English was presented by Bobby Friction and produced by Laura Parfitt. It was a White Pebble production for BBC World Service.
There are dozens of different podcasts now available from the BBC, including news, documentaries, science, business, arts and sport. For details of them all, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.